702. Weekend Breakfast with Googs Mthungu.
Standing in for Filwe Mpakanyane.
Let's walk the talk.
21 minutes before 9 o'clock, joined now on the line by jazz musician, jazz legend, Don Laka, to speak about the 50th anniversary or 50 years of his musical career. And maybe you have a question, perhaps you have a memory that you'd like to share with us that involves Don. Give us a call on 011-883-0702 or send us an SMS on 31702. Don, good morning and welcome to Weekend Breakfast.
Morning, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So 50 years in the music business.
Yes.
Did you ever imagine you would be in the game for this long?
No.
Okay. How long did, what was your plan when you started? What did you think would be kind of how long you'd be in this business?
You know, the weirdest thing is that when we started back in the 70s, when I started, by the way, there was no TV and it was only radio, and it was almost impossible to get into the music industry because you have to have had someone who has discovered you, or, you know, like I pushed myself into the industry because it was almost unheard of, you know. Once I made my way in, you know, when I put my foot in, I knew that it's not going to come out. It's got, you know, I'm getting in of my whole body gets in, you know, but I didn't know it was going to last for 50 years. You know, I must say, you know, I come from a period where, you know, we are all resilient in doing things, you know.
After 50 years, do you still have the same enthusiasm and excitement for music as you have? Like, how do you think, what role does music play for you now, 50 years later?
I think I actually, you know, as every minute, every year goes by, you know, my love for music grows even much more.
Mm.
You know, it never diminishes in a moment. I started off back then with the pop music and jazz and all that stuff, and went on. Now I'm becoming a classical composer, you know, adding that to you know, as a new thing in my career, you know. So that's very exciting, I must say. I've entered a very exciting period of a musician's career now.
Mm. I was reading an interview you did recently, and one of the things you're quoted as saying is, people will try to label me and says he plays jazz or he doesn't play jazz, and that you've never had a problem with people defining your music. Would you define yourself as a jazz musician? Like, you were just saying that now you're currently doing, for instance, classical compositions. Would you define yourself as a jazz musician?
You know what? I do play jazz because I grew up playing jazz, but I also played pop music. I also played rock and roll music. I'm doing classical music now. So I've done all sorts of things. I mean, in 2015, 16, I was touring the UK, promoting my an album called Afro Chopin, which I took the Chopin's music, classical music, and Africanized it. Mm-hmm. So I've covered all sorts of genres. It would be difficult to really classify me as one genre music and musician, you know, and I really don't like those labels that much, you know. They don't really mean much to me. And I remember Quincy Jones saying, you know, there's only two types of music, good music and bad music.
That's a brilliant quote. But then at some point you stopped making music for a few years. Why was that? And I think it was about 8 years where you weren't making music.
You know, I didn't go out there and release music locally. That 8 years, you know, I just disappeared on the South African scene because I didn't see any growth or people were, you know, like not interested in listening to new music or anything. But I spent the 8 years promoting my music and releasing some few albums in Europe. In the UK, as I say, the Afro Chopin album and an album called Travels, which are not released in South Africa, and Portraits album. So I kept churning out music almost every single year in that 8 years, internationally, not locally.
And why not locally? I know one of the big things was around what was happening with local radio.
Yeah. You know, at the time, you know, and I still feel that the local radio stations is giving us a raw deal as musicians, most especially jazz musicians. Today, you know, you don't find any jazz on radio anymore. But you go out there, there's festivals labeled jazz. You wonder why. And that's out of that jazz festival, there's only about two jazz artists or one jazz artist in there. And why they use the word jazz? I mean, the jazz is such a hip thing. Only, you know, when it's a name. But the musically, people won't listen to it. But I was very fortunate when I started Quiet Jazz, where, you know, I brought in more melody. You see, normally jazz, you have, like, we would have, you know, introduction of the melody, and it just solos throughout. But I relieved the earlier jazz, where the swing era, where melody played king. And that's why when I brought Quiet Jazz, the melody became king again.
In terms of how we're doing now, you were saying, you know, one of the things that concerned you was that we weren't playing enough jazz music, but also local music. I remember when there was the big debate around, I think it was the 90% a local music discussion. You were quite vocal about the need for local radio to support local artists. Are we doing that? Have we improved in how much local music, and specifically jazz, we're playing on the radio?
Jazz hasn't improved, but local music has improved, by the way, since then. And I'm glad that I put up that fight heavily. But today we've seen the rewards of it, and a lot of people now are proud of listening to South African music. However, jazz has been left behind, and you know, and there's a lot of young musicians out there who are just graduating from jazz institutions and music institutions, who unfortunately won't see their career rise up to anything. It's just a sad situation, by the way.
Yeah, but also, how has the growth or the introduction of digital streaming platforms, alternative music platforms, has that made any difference to artists? So you don't necessarily have to rely solely on radio. Radio remains very important. But has streaming and digital platforms made any impact?
You know what? That's a difficult one, because we're all learning what streaming is. And, you know, for now, streaming hasn't made money for any person except for probably 0.05% of all the artists in the world. That's why most of the people now don't rely on streaming, but you know, or they're just giving away their music without relying on royalties and stuff coming out of there. But what it has done actually is that music now can be released and it will reach anyone anywhere in the world at the same time, which is a good thing. But to get in there, how to you know, market yourself into the system. And it's still, you know, a matter of time for musicians to really get into that and work their way inside the system.
One of the questions we are that often kind of comes up, or that one we try to find answers to, is Kwaito dead? And I mean, you were one of the people that was right there. You're considered one of the pioneers of this genre, and we know how important it was for, you know, the sound of, I mean, we're celebrating Freedom Day a couple of days ago. We know how important it was as the sound of this new democracy. And having been one of the people that was right there when it was being created, when you hear that question, what is your response? Is it dead, or has it evolved? It's become something else, and you hear it in, say, Amapiano.
Well, I'm glad that Kwaito was actually started in my bedroom in High Point back then, you know. But you know what? The nice thing about that that music should evolve. And I'm enjoying all the offshoots that are coming out of Kwaito. Choir as a genre is a strong genre. It's the same as when you say blues, and then you have all the offshoots of rock and roll and other things coming out. Excuse me. And, you know, with choir, so will remain as it was, but there will be those offshoots that come out of that that will make it out. You know, as you look at Amapiano now, for me, it's just a mix of Guaito and Guay jazz that I've done, you know. So it's a new offshoot, which it shows that South African musicians are always looking for something new, and which is a very important thing. Guaito will remain, you know, blues will remain, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. 2-3 years ago, actually, after 8 years away, you came back with a new album, an album called Passion. And it was an album that you said didn't follow kind of the rules. You were putting it together in a way that didn't kind of, didn't follow how you'd worked on previous albums. Tell us about how Passion, came together.
Your passion, you know, this the music that I composed during lockdown period, Uno Mundo, Passion, and Reflection. Reflection came before that, actually. Passion was one of the albums where, you know, I was searching for more things and keeping the melody stronger. And that's why I call it Passion, because for me, as I say, melody is king. And if you listen to that album, I tell you, you would think this is so fresh, and this is what I've had before. You know, you wouldn't categorize it as only just jazz, pop, or anything. It was just great music. That's what I felt at the time, and I still regard it as one of my strongest albums that I've ever composed, actually.
Mm-hmm. And if you had to kind of, is this part of the kind of the classical composition that you were talking about earlier? Was Passion an example of that?
Now, the classical thing, it's a completely different thing. I grew up, you know, when I was growing up, I used to hate classical music very much.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, and I wanted, when I was teaching myself of the music, because I'm self-taught, then I discovered that, you know, the musicians, the classical musicians, and I wanted to become a classical conductor. And then after, you know, trying too hard to get into the music, it was not possible because of apartheid days when I was refused entry into an institution in Pretoria of music. So, but I continued teaching myself, and I started playing classical guitar and got into piano, and then I started composing. But my compositions, I couldn't hear them played anywhere, so I didn't know what was good or if they were good or not. But with today's technology, it's easier to compose and listen to your music played back. And, you know, I've done such huge study into the music, and I'm very excited with the new orchestra suite that I just finished. And with another piece which I dedicate to the flood victims, of KZN, and for an 80-piece orchestra and a 200-piece choir. So I'm hoping it will be performed soon.
Mm-hmm. You talk about how, as a musician, you were self-taught. You taught yourself. Is this both the guitar and the piano? And also, there's an interesting story that you shared in a recent interview about your encounter with the great Abdullah Ibrahim, and watching, you know, him play. That also had an influence on your own journey with the piano. Tell us about that as well.
Yeah, I met Abdullah Ibrahim actually in 1977, I think, 77. And I was playing bass for a band called The Flood. And Flood had a huge record called Let Me Into Your Life. So Abdullah was opening for us. So when I got backstage coming to do sound check, and we found him playing at the piano, and he was playing, from then onwards, and I was not playing piano, but I was just a guitarist for the 2 days. And I said, this is an instrument that I want to do. And his influence on me is so immense. I mean, if you listen to my music today, it's full of Guma music, Marabi and Kwela. That's my white jazz with bass on Guma, Kwela and Marabi. And as I say, I was largely self-taught. I mean, I play several instruments, from drums, guitar, bass, saxophone, which I haven't played for a long time, and harmonica. So I played several instruments, and I still play them on my recording.
Mm-hmm. Is there an instrument that you find you gravitate to the most? Do you have a favorite?
Well, I play piano, but I still love playing guitar. It's an incredible instrument. It's easier to carry and move around. Piano is not that easy to carry. You know, it's a heavy instrument, and it's very rare to find great instruments in this country, you know, when you go to performance places. But in Europe, I mean, everywhere you go, there's a beautiful piano there.
Why is it difficult to find good instruments here? Is it because we just don't make them? They're too expensive to bring in?
Many venues here don't have pianos. For one to really have a piano, you have to do some, you know, even if when we put that on our rider in the festivals, it's very rare that the promoters will honor that and bring a piano on stage. So it's just difficult. There hasn't been a tradition of bringing out, you know, giving jazz musicians what their instruments. You know, that's why, you know, I think it, the problem is that the people that promote or so-called promoters of jazz musicians really don't understand the importance of playing on a good instrument.
Mm-hmm. And so if you don't get a good piano, so for instance, if you ask for one, what are you then expected to, what do you normally then find?
We always carry a keyboard around, you know, electronic keyboards that mimic the piano. You know, they're not bad, but it's not the real instrument. It's not the real thing. Mm-hmm. But we always carry those around, and which are, you know, fairly available most of the time in all the, you know, shows that we play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for you, I mean, having been in the music industry for so long, having done so much, 11 albums, having, you know, been involved in arguably one of the most influential record labels in music through Kalawa Chazmi. Is there still something that you still want to do that in the 50 years you haven't gotten to yet?
I think there's still a lot to be done in music. You know, music, you know, as I say, for me, it's not about this genre that I'm working on. I mean, I listen to traditional music from all over the world. I mean, that influenced me. You know, when I first started guitar, and there was a guy called Lawrence Mendes who used to, you know, help us, you know, with playing new chords he is the guy who instilled this thing in me that, listen, if you want to become a good musician, you must listen to all types of music. And I realized when I first walked in at Gallo in 1972, as a young kid, I was 14 years old, and, in backstage I met, I walked in the same day as Black Mambas was coming on to the scene also. Then I met Ray Peary then. Those were the guys that actually performed on my first record in 1972. And we continued the relationship until his passing. And I met so many people back then. And, I think that also created a sense of security in me that, you know, I can trust myself. That's why I actually see in my when I tell the story of how I met Huma Sekela, I mean, it's such an incredible story also, and my relationship with him up to our Grammy nomination, you know, of the album that I produced for him.
Mm-hmm. What is the story of how you met Brahue? I'm saying the story of how you met Brahue.
Well, Brahue, when he settled in Botswana in the 80s, we were practicing in Joburg. We were forming a band with Bagiti, myself. Bagiti is the bass player for Simon. And we were starting out, and while we were practicing, and Ian Fair, who was the record label owner, had the numbers. Actually, he was funding the recording, I think, in Botswana. So he gave me the numbers of you. Then I called Botswana on from the sticky box outside. Remember the sticky box? You know, at the dial Botswana, I mean, the phone was actually answered by Stuart Levy, you know, called you. And I introduced myself. Obviously, you didn't know I was a delighted fat cunt.
Oh, wow.
But later on, 10 years later, when he would come to South Africa, then I made sure that I met him a few years later, and then the relationship started where with that. But it was such a nice story. You know, it needs time to really tell the story. It was such a beautiful story.
Yes, it does. Don, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but congratulations on 50 years, and thank you for joining us this morning.